This is New Hampshire Calling, a pop-up show from NHPR, where we help each other navigate daily life in this time of uncertainty. I'm Jack Rodolico, live in Concord. Tonight, in light of all of the protests around the world, around the country, and around New Hampshire since the killing of George Floyd by a now former Minneapolis police officer, here on New Hampshire Calling, we will continue our conversation about Black identity, racism, and protest in this state, in New Hampshire. And tonight, we're going to launch our conversation from this really simple data point or fact about this state. And it's this factoid about New Hampshire that I personally find really fascinating. Here it is. 58% of the residents of this state were not born in this state. That's a higher proportion than most other states. And think about that for a moment. More than half of New Hampshire residents relocated here, mostly from other states, but also from other countries. That figure, by the way, comes from a 2019 report out of UNH's Carsey School of Public Policy. And so it's a fact that presents us all with an opportunity, because for those of you listening, like me, who grew up somewhere else, our own life stories give us this chance to compare how we all talk about race and maybe ways New Hampshire needs to change or move forward. So here's what I want to know from those of you who moved here from someplace else, and I know it's a lot of you. First of all, if you are Black, what's your take on how welcoming New Hampshire has been to you? What did you expect before you came here, and what was the reality that met you? And if you are not Black, but you are from away, from someplace else, what have you noticed about how this state talks about race and racism? Is it different from wherever you lived before? New Hampshire Calling is live, and our phone number is 603-513-7700. Again, the number is 603-513-7700. You can also email us at nhcalling@nhpr.org. To start us off, I want to bring somebody back to the show who was on last night. Dottie Morris is on the line. Hey, Dottie, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
how are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Glad to hear your voice again. Just to remind people, you are Dr. Dottie Morris. You are Associate Vice President for Institutional Diversity and Equity at Keene State College. I wanted to bring you back because we had this like really wide-ranging conversation last night about, you know, Black identity in New Hampshire in this moment of protest. And you said this one thing at one point that is a perfect bridge to tonight. And it was, you grew up in Louisiana and you were comparing and contrasting the ways racism manifested in your own life there compared with here. Can you just walk me through that again?
Right. What I said is, you know, when I was growing up in Louisiana and living there, the racism was really overt. You know, people could see it, identify it, name it, help you name it. And even as a kid, it was really obvious to me, and I had people to help me navigate and name those things. What I noticed when I moved here, it's a lot more subtle, a little more undercurrent. It kind of smells and it kind of tastes as if it's racism, but you can't really put your finger on it.
Huh.
And when you can't do that, I think I mentioned the whole idea that what happens when you try to name it, someone tells you, well, that's not exactly what it is. And then I talked about the issue of gaslighting.
Right.
Yeah.
You feel like it, meaning like you feel like someone's trying to pull something on you, or and can you give me an anecdote, like something that might happen in the South versus something that might happen here, and why it's more I think that helps people understand why it's more confusing here.
Yeah, it is very confusing. You know, I mean, down South, it was very clear. If you went into an establishment, that people didn't want you there because there was a lot of ignoring and sometimes even some overt kind of comments being made loud enough for you to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas here, it's a little more like you walk somewhere and you're invisible. People will talk about feeling like they are invisible. So the person will not talk to them directly. They'll go and talk to another person before they talk to them. They have to really, really make it known. So that's just an example of some of the things that I've heard from different people. Like, God, I feel invisible here.
Yeah.
And the gaslighting part is when you try to name it, someone tells you that's not what it really is. And it's based on an old movie called Gaslight, where this man was doing particular things with his wife to try to make it look like she was the one that had the problem when he was really doing these things. So it's a great old movie. So I think this whole idea of gaslighting is something that we're starting to realize more and more and more.
Yeah.
And it's not quote intentional that the other person is saying that's not what it is. So it doesn't matter the intent, the outcome is you feel as though you're the one that's losing your mind because you can't trust what you're seeing anymore.
Well, and the problem with that from the perspective of the person, you know, saying, you know, let's call it a microaggression in a certain instance, right? If they don't recognize it, if you confront them with it, you know, I think a lot of times these are individuals who don't know they are being racist or don't think of themselves that way. And so that is jarring to be, you know, and it makes people feel a little defensive. I was watching this TED Talk once from this individual who described it was the best analogy I ever heard about this was that racism is kind of like plaque on your teeth. Like it just kind of slowly builds over time from all the things we're absorbing. And if we don't address it and take care of it, it just kind of builds up without us, you know, like, and it's, that's part of the subtlety of confronting people about it here. Right.
Right. And, you know, I mean, that's that whole thing is when the real doesn't match up with the ideal or who you think you are. Cause if I know that I'm racist and you say something, I'll go like, what's your point? Yes, I know.
Yeah.
Whereas if you don't know, or if you even support to be anti-racist and you engage in an activity that is, a racist activity, when someone gives you feedback, you do want to defend because you don't see that as a part of yourself, or you try to give explanations as to why you're not that way.
Right. Yeah.
So it makes it really hard sometimes to take that type of feedback, especially when you equate good being anti-racist or not racist.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a difference between being not racist and anti-racist.
Right. Dr. Dottie Morris, thanks so much for coming
back to help us
frame this, okay?
Okay, take care now.
Take care. That's Dr. Dottie Morris, Associate VP for Institutional Diversity and Equity at Keene State College. I'm Jack Rodolico. This is New Hampshire Calling. We are live, and we want to hear from you, especially if you were not born in New Hampshire, which is more than half of the state of New Hampshire. Here's what we want to know tonight. If you are black and you moved here from somewhere else, how's the state treated you? Has it compared with what you thought the treatment was that you'd get here? And if you're not black, but you came from someplace else, what have you noticed about how this state talks about race and racism? Is it different from wherever you lived before? The number is 603-513-7700. That's 603-513-7700. You can also email us at nhcalling@nhpr.org. We've got Masha on the line from Fremont. Masha, did I say your name right? I'm sorry.
That's okay.
What? How is it? Masia?
Yes.
Okay, good. Sorry about that. Go right ahead.
That's okay. What I was going to say is that New Hampshireites pretend that they're not racist. And it's easier to cope with things when you know exactly where you stand than when you think you know you stand and then you find out that isn't where you really stand.
Hmm. Kind of like what we were hearing from Dottie just now. If you're experiencing something and it's hard to point it out to the individual who is making you feel uncomfortable because they're saying something racist or subtly racist, if they're not aware of it, you can't even have an open conversation about it. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Or if you try to have a conversation, they tell you that you are seeing more than what there really is.
Right. And which belittles
so
your perspective.
Correct.
Yeah.
They do not want to walk in someone else's shoe.
Hmm.
And I think that's a part of, they're saying is, well, you've come here, so you're supposed to live like us.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say it's funny. Europeans have gone to every other country, but they've never lived like the people of the country they've gone to.
Hmm. And Masia, is this, let me just ask you too, how are you doing right now in this moment of everything that's happening in the world?
in this moment, I'm hoping that we have real change.
Mm-hmm.
I am from another country. I'm also a city girl that's come to a country to live in the countryside. It's different now because when I first came here, there was no other blacks. Literally, I never saw another black.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember a friend told one of my children.
Oh, Masia, we lost the connection there. I apologize, but we appreciate you calling in, and feel free to reach out by email if you wanted to tell us something else. I'd be happy to hear from you. Let's move on to Shauna, who's on the line in Concord. Hey, Shauna, welcome to the show. I'm glad you're here.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so Shauna, you and I have talked a couple times over the last week. Here's what I'll set you up a little bit here. Your name is Shauna McDuffie. You're 31. You live here in Concord. You are a military veteran, and you work for the VA. You are from D.C. originally. So briefly, walk me through the route from D.C. to New Hampshire for you.
Started with joining the military and lived in Japan, moved to Japan for 2 years, and from there moved to Jacksonville, North Carolina,
mm-hmm.
and from there that was another 2 years, and then to Oceanside, California, which is in Southern California, for 3 years, and then I ended up in New Hampshire. My husband, who's also a service member, got out. He's from New Hampshire and wanted to come back home to go to school.
Right.
So that's how my journey has brought me here.
And Shauna, can you talk me through, like, what was your expectation? Did you have an expectation of how you would be treated as a black woman in Concord versus, you know, the reality that you met when you were here?
Well, I first started off when we first moved here, actually in the Lakes region. And that was a culture shock. I didn't expect to see Confederate flags flying so prevalently
mm-hmm.
in such a northern state. So I really wasn't sure how it would be treated. I was pretty apprehensive, pretty on edge, just based on what I was seeing. And moving to Concord, I thought it would be a bit better. The capital, obviously, and it's had its moments. For example, I don't particularly go to a restaurant on Main Street. I've been there 3 or 4 times, and each time I went there, I was just inexplicably stared at or, you know, followed with the eyes.
Mm.
For no reason. Just it makes you wonder what's different about me than every other patron in here.
Mm-hmm. And you know, we've heard from a few folks already, you know, just in the last 10 minutes about this feeling of being gaslighted as opposed to we heard from someone from the South and someone from another country feeling like people here don't really understand the subtle ways racism impacts black residents of this state. Do you feel that way sometimes? Like it's hard to even point things out to people who might not even be aware of what they're doing?
Oh, absolutely. They've been in this environment for so long. It's kind of hard to see the ripples and the changes. So when a new voice comes in and, you know, says, hey, this isn't right, this doesn't feel like, well, no, this is just how it's always been. You know, they didn't mean it that way. It makes you feel kind of crazy. Like, yeah, maybe I'm the one that is seeing things wrong. Maybe I'm the one that's on edge.
Yeah. And Shauna, you went to there have been, you know, protests all over the state in the last week or so. You went to the one in Concord last weekend. How'd you feel? You know, did it change anything for you in terms of the ways people you heard people talking, or did it change your opinion about your adopted home now of Concord?
It made me feel hopeful. Just seeing the sheer number of people that were there, you know, screaming, "No justice, no peace." They're standing up for a black woman like myself, for you know, Breonna Taylor, for George Floyd. It made me think that, you know, maybe things are possible, things can change. That, you know, Gen Z, maybe they got our back down a little. They can really change the track that our country has been on.
And it sounds like there's a dose of skeptical optimism, though, right? Yeah, it's, you know, you're hopeful, but you're waiting to see.
I'm waiting for action. That's just
sure.
Kind of how my personality is. I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. It just kind of, you know, protects yourself from disappointment. You know,
yeah.
You hope that white allies, you know, stand with you for the fight, you know, for the long haul, but they don't have to. You know, that's the, you know, the thing about white privilege. You don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have to stand in this black body for the rest of my life, so I have to fight. And then, you know, maybe even if half of the people who were at the protest on this weekend continue on this fight, it'll make a world of change.
Shauna McDuffie of Concord, thanks so much for being on the show. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, talk again. Listeners, I just want to remind you, this is New Hampshire Calling. We're asking those of you who were not born in New Hampshire, who again are more than half the state, to call in, compare notes. If you are black and you moved here, how has this state treated you? How does the state's self-image compare with what you've experienced? And if you're not black, but you came from someplace else, what have you noticed about how this state talks about race and racism? Is it different from wherever you came from before? The phone lines are open. Call us at 603-513-7700. That's 603-513-7700. Or email nhcalling@nhpr.org. We're going to go now to Emily, who's calling from Hopkinton. Hey, Emily, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so where are you from before this, and what's your story?
I grew up in Maryland. It's about an hour outside of Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
So when I first moved to New Hampshire, it was like a big culture shock to see just the whiteness of the state. Like, I just wasn't expecting that at all, I guess, just because where I grew up, you know, most of the people in my community were black, so
mm-hmm.
it was definitely different. And I think that a lot of previous speakers have hit this on the nail, too, where they said a lot of the racism here, I think, is more subtle, or people just don't really realize that the issues that are still existent today about racism still go on because it doesn't happen in their neighborhood, you know. For example, I worked at a high school for a few years as a teacher's assistant, and mm-hmm. I remember conversations we'd have about, you know, like civil rights movement and all that. I got a feeling that the students really just couldn't grasp the reality of all that, and like that was a real event that happened, you know what I mean? And I remember there was one student in the entire school who was black, and I remember thinking how that must feel for him, like how awful that must feel that he's the only student in the entire class listening to this discussion right now that can have any input on it or know what it must feel like. And I think that's the biggest thing that sticks out for me of New Hampshire.
Yeah. Emily, and that builds off some points we heard last night from some guests who had talked about a number of experiences of being the only black person in a room, in a classroom, or living in communities that are diverse, but then parts of their life in New Hampshire are much more segregated, right? But thanks so much for calling in, Emily. We appreciate hearing from you.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to take a very quick break, but I want to remind you that we are talking about the way we talk about race in New Hampshire, and we want to hear from people who were not born here, who moved here. What's your perspective on how this state talks about race? And if you are black and you moved here from someplace else, have you been treated? Call us, 603-513-7700. That's 513-7700. Stay with us.
Under the mantle of Dr. King, when he said on the hills of New Hampshire, and I want to say in the streets of New Hampshire, let justice reign.
I love New Hampshire with all my heart and my soul. But as a state, we are not innocent.
White supremacy doesn't exist out there. It lives and breathes right here in our local political and public spaces, our nursing homes, our hospitals.
But let us not forget that this is not a black issue. This is a human rights issue.
Voices from protests around the state over the last week. This is New Hampshire Calling, a pop-up show from NHPR. I'm Jack Rodolico, live in Concord. And all this week, we're talking about black identity, racism, and protest in New Hampshire. We're asking those of you tonight, that is, we're asking those of you who were not born in New Hampshire, which, again, is 58% of the state. I feel like I can't say that enough because it's really fascinating to me. 58% of the residents of the state were not born here. If that's you, we want to hear from you. And here's why. Two angles for you to come into this conversation. If you are black and you moved here from someplace else, we want to know, how has this state treated you and how has it matched with whatever expectations you may have had? And if you're not black, but you came from someplace else, what have you noticed about how this state talks about race and racism? Is it different from wherever you lived before? Call us to tell your story. Our number is 603-513-7700. That's 603-513-7700. Or email nhcalling@nhpr.org. We're going to go now to Michael in Lee. Michael, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Now, Michael, this is the Michael I spoke to earlier today, right?
This is the same one.
All right.
I'm not my guard, though.
Good. I'm glad to hear from you. Tell the folks a little bit about yourself, and, you know, how your family came here, and if you could.
Okay. Well, my father was in the U.S. Navy, and I'm black, okay? Well, we're all black. And we lived in Brooklyn, New York. And our neighborhood underwent a change, and my brother was beaten up at age 13 and had his paper money taken from him by some gang members. Mm. And then I, at age 4, was kicked in the nads by a thug brought in by the gang leader's little brother when I wouldn't give him my candy.
Okay.
And left me howling on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
And then we caught a man looking in the window at 1 in the afternoon at my 7-year-old sister. So we had a relative who had a house in New Hampshire that they wanted to turn into a bed and breakfast for black folks with adequate means from the New York and New Jersey area. Well, it failed miserably because it was too far up Route 1 to drive. So they offered us a house and we moved in. So we went from 362 Grand Avenue in Brooklyn, New York, to a dirt road in Lee, New Hampshire, population 600.
And Michael, this is 1957, right?
I was 4 years old.
And you've been here ever since?
I've been other places, but
sure.
Yeah.
And 57, so your family integrates the Lee public school system, you and your siblings, the same year as integration was like a massive national story, right?
I came home from kindergarten at Oyster River and watched them integrate Little Rock on TV.
Wow, this is Little Rock. And so I know you've got a gajillion stories, and you know, I think the interesting thing is, and you're a writer, and you've written about these stories. And before we let you go, we'll have you tell everybody your website where they can find your stories and your books. But we're hearing from people who've moved here last 20 years, last 10 years, last 5 years. You moved here in the 50s. Tell us something about life growing up as what I assume was the only, or maybe one of the only, black families in Lee. Give us, bring us back to a moment that says something.
Well, the main thing about it is that in life, most people leave you alone, whether they like you or not. And there are a few, there's always somebody that's going to try to get under you, you know what I mean? Or over on you, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
So we got along fine with most of our neighbors. But there was an element. And so when my dad was deployed in the Navy, we'd get calls telling us to get out of the house in 15 minutes because they're coming to burn the son of a bitch down.
Hmm.
And we would turn on the lights and nobody would come. After my dad retired from the Navy, I was about 9 years old at this time. We got a phone call one night and threatened, and the person threatened my mom, and she began to cry. My dad grabbed the phone and, you know, screamed at the guy and said, "I'm going to come after you with my pistol," and so forth. And my mother chewed him out and said, "You're working 6 days a week. You can't go after anybody. We're helpless." So I went up to the Lee's hardware store at the Lee Circle, bought me a .22 and a box of 50 bullets a week. And I stood on top of the hill that we lived on and ripped through the whole box every Saturday until somebody came and watched me shoot. And it was 120 feet out, 20 feet down elevation through a crosswind. And he went back to the American Legion in Newmarket and said, "Young Rod up on the Hook Road can shoot like a bastard." And the phone call stopped.
Hmm.
But the backside of that was we had a breach drill for the house.
This is a, like the equivalent of a family fire drill, but in case... in case you were attacked by some locals. Well, Michael, can you tell people, we've got some other folks on the line that we want to get to, and I could listen to you tell stories all night, but just tell people what your website is.
Sketchesoflee.com. And I also do a live performance of about 90 minutes called Sketches of Lee, A Black American Experience.
That's Michael Ward, and thank you so much for calling in. We appreciate it.
I appreciate it as well. Thank you.
Take care. Tonight, folks, you're hearing this pretty unbelievable stories of predominantly black residents of New Hampshire who moved here from away, from any place else, to tell us stories about how they've been treated here, how their expectations were met or not met. But we also are hearing from anyone who moved to New Hampshire from someplace else. And again, that's most of the state. Whatever race you are, whatever your background is, if you came here from someplace else, you call in too. Tell us what you've noticed about how this state talks about race and racism. What's different about things here as opposed to anywhere else? Call us at 603-513-7700. That's 603-513-7700. Or email nhcalling at nhpr.org. I'm going to go now to Palmyra Wilson in Dover. Palmyra, are you there? Hold on. We got her. I'm sure we got her. Are you there, Palmyra?
Yeah, hi.
Hey. Yes, I can hear you. Great. Thanks. Palmyra Wilson, I wanted you to come on the show tonight. There's a lot of interesting stuff about you, but I'm going to summarize a few things so people know. You're 16 years old, right?
Yes.
You're entering your senior year at Dover High School. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You were originally born in Angola. You spent time in South Africa and came to New Hampshire by way of Maine. I got all that right?
Yes.
Okay. I don't necessarily want to start with this particular anecdote, but I think it's important and it's relevant to understand where your activism comes from. So remind me what happened at Dover High School, your school, in December of 2018.
A KKK video went around of students making a jingle. That's what happened last year.
Yeah, and this was in a classroom with a teacher and with students, and somebody videotaped it. It was briefly national news, but it was also after it was national news. It was your life. You went to the school. And you, what involved, you weren't in the room when it happened, but what was your involvement, getting the word out?
I wasn't in the room when it happened, but my friend posted it in her private Snapchat, and I took it and sent it out to the news and different, like, areas of social media.
Mm-hmm. And so this was clearly, extremely inappropriate and, you know, but you and your classmates responded in your own way. You created a safe space for students of colors to meet and connect. You've created Project Dream, which stands for Diversity, Respect, Education, Advocacy, and Mission. And, you know, I think that my big question for you, given all that background, is, like, you've been banging this drum about inclusion in New Hampshire for the last year or more. Before George Floyd, before this movement, this massive movement of the last 2 weeks. So where's your head at right now as you see other people coming to a lot of the conclusions and examining the racism in the state the way you've been living it the last couple of years?
I didn't create Dream. I was part of the few people that started it, but I didn't create it.
Okay, thank you for clarifying.
But it just feels nice to see that people are finally gaining awareness for something that I've been living through. I've been saying things like this every day. I've been in that mindset, but it's good to hear that other people are finally coming out and saying stuff about it.
Yeah. And you know, also, I'm just curious, like, having lived in South Africa for 2 years before you came to the U.S., you know, that is the country that was once the home of apartheid. Did that experience prepare you in any way for life and racism that you experience here in New Hampshire and in the U.S.?
In some ways, yes. In some ways, no. Because I had to move out of South Africa because they were killing all people that weren't from South Africa, which is black-on-black crime. But that wasn't really racism. That was, like, a bunch of self-hate and people not liking their own kind.
Okay.
But then when I moved to the U.S., it's, like, racism, which is, like, white people or people not liking other people based on their color, their skin, where in South Africa it was just because they weren't from the place.
Yeah, yeah.
So it didn't really prepare me as much.
Palmyra Wilson, thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, take care. We're talking to listeners who were not born in the state of New Hampshire tonight. Again, that is 58% of the residents of this state, according to a report at a UNH from last year. And here's what we are asking them, or you, if it's you who came here from someplace else. If you are black and you moved here, how has this state treated you? How did it match up with your expectations, if you had any, of New Hampshire? And if you are not black, but you came here from someplace else, what have you noticed about how this state talks about race and racism? How is it different from wherever you lived before? Call us to tell us your story at 603-513-7700. That's 603-513-7700. Or email nhcalling@nhpr.org. Jessica is on the line in Manchester. Hey, Jessica, welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm glad to hear from you. Tell us where you were from before and what have you noticed here?
I am originally from California. Mm-hmm. I was born in Southern, lived a lot of my life in Northern, and my now ex-husband, was transferred out here to the Manchester Portsmouth Shipyard.
Mm.
However, I am brown. I can pass as white.
Hmm.
I remember that the first incident that we experienced coming out here was we went to a car wash that's on South Willow, corner of Beach and South Willow. And we were really surprised by the prices of the car wash. And the owner of the car wash said, well, I don't have a bunch of Mexicans running around in order to charge you $5 for a car wash.
Mm.
And I just kind of looked at him and said, well, this Mexican will pay you in order to wash my car. So there's a lot of things where you come upon somebody that thinks you are one race, and no, you're another race, and they talk negative things about you or about your people, and it's been very hurtful.
And Jessica, are there moments, sorry, but are there moments when you decide to speak up versus moments you decide not to? And like, what goes into that calculation?
Most of the moments I speak up to, because mm-hmm. I can't let it slide. I just can't, like, for my daughter's sake, for everybody's sake, I can't let it slide. So, you know, like I said, when we went through that car wash, it was like, well, this Mexican is going to pay you, you white man, to wash my car. So there you go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he used derogatory language toward, you know, people of my race, you know, people of my daughter's race, you know. So what I have realized is that at least living in Manchester, coming from California, I am very happy with the diversity that you see in Manchester, because that's what I grew up with. That's what I want my child to be around. I want my child to understand and know the difference of ethnicities, because she would get this in California. And the only place she's going to find this really in New Hampshire, because when we moved here, the only reason we moved here is because my father lives here, and he's Mexican too, but it's like 90, when we moved here, it was 96% white.
Mm-hmm.
And living in Manchester, and even my daughter going to a Title I school, which is a school that doesn't get enough funding, but
Well, Jessica, I'm sorry. I'm actually running up against a break here. So I'm going to have to let you go, but
no, that's fine.
I really appreciate hearing from you and hearing your perspective. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thanks. Have a good night. Bye.
Yeah. Thank you. We're going to take a quick break. This is New Hampshire Calling. I'm Jack Rodolico. Stay with us. Welcome back. This is New Hampshire Calling, a pop-up show from NHPR. I'm Jack Rodolico, live in Concord. Tomorrow night on New Hampshire Calling, I want to give you a heads up what that show will be about. We're going to take a little different approach to this ongoing conversation about Black identity and racism and protest in New Hampshire. We're going to try to address a question that is on a lot of people's minds right now. And here it is. What does it mean to be an ally against racism in New Hampshire? It's one thing to read about George Floyd and, you know, issues around the country, but what does it mean to be an ally against racism here in this state, in the Granite State? That's going to be our topic, and it will be a sort of solutions-oriented show. So if you are new to this idea, or if you've been, you know, banging this drum for a long time, everyone is welcome to call in. You can ask questions or, you know, give your advice on what it actually means to be an ally against racism. And it should be a helpful sort of toolkit that you can move forward with. That's tomorrow night. And if you want to reach out in advance, you can always call to leave a voicemail. It's 603-513-7700. Or you can send an email or a voice memo that you record on your phone to nhcalling@nhpr.org. We're going to go now to Robert, who's on the line. Hey, Robert, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, welcome.
Jack, I grew up not too far from here in Boston, Roxbury.
Yeah.
And I attended summer camp up in Newfoundland Lake in the Lakes region. And during the 60s, you know, the train service up there was pretty good from Boston's North Station. And what I found up there was you were isolated. There weren't many, if any, Black people. The Black people that did go to the summer camp, Groton School Camp, was from the Boston area.
Okay.
Just living here and coming back to New England area, because I was living in Washington, D.C. for a number of years, I found that people are just closed. Some people are the oldest, especially older citizens, are closed to the idea that you are who you are. And then when you speak up and you articulate, you're very knowledgeable of what you're talking about. It's sort of like, is this real? And it was just like Professor Dottie was talking about gaslighting. It's a de facto form of racism that you have. And it's some of the older citizens of the state just grew up in an era where there was a lot of racism throughout the entire country. It was a ongoing thing. It was just different forms. Different locations took different forms.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to remember, too, not that long ago, Boston's Eyewitness News, Channel 4, did a commentary about your old ex-governor, Milgram Thompson, who was involved in the John Birch Society.
Mm.
And I think that opens up old wounds of what New Hampshire was really all about. And of course, John Birch Society moved out of New Hampshire because the state started to get a little bit more browner and a little bit less whiter.
Robert, I hear you loud and clear, and I appreciate your point. We've got some other folks I want to get to.
But I understand.
Thank you so much for calling.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Let's go next to Barbara, who's on the line. Hey, Barbara, welcome to New Hampshire Calling.
Hi. I'm living in Portsmouth and I'm a German, and I never became American, and I have lived here for over 40 years. When I came to America, to Newmarket, New Hampshire, there were no blacks, and I was really disappointed, and now I live in Portsmouth, and there are not many either. And I am, I keep thinking about my own nationality, and when I came over here, that I was scared to be a German with the Holocaust, and I really had trouble with it, and so. And in Europe, wherever we went, we hid that we were German, and tried to be whatever, Swiss or Swedish or so. And here, everybody excused it. And
Barbara, yeah, it sounds like you're...
I don't understand the trouble with racism, because I'm just longing to have a mixed culture, because I don't feel like I have a nationality. I feel I'm just, you know, of the world or so. I would never hang out a flag or so. But when I went to Baltimore or to California, and there was a real nice mix, and I felt really great, and that this is the world or so. But here I only had my in-laws who talked about negatively about blacks and Jews, by the way.
Yeah.
And now I know a Trumpist who would like all blacks to go home. What do they do here? And I just, for me, it is just...
Barbara, it sounds like it's anathema to your worldview and also a level of... empathy based on your experience coming here as an outsider. Thank you so much for calling. We appreciate it. We're going to go now to someone who we were looking forward to talking to tonight, and we're going to give her the last word. Rachel, you on the line?
I am. Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Rachel Duncan, how are you? You live in where, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we're out here.
Oh, yeah, out there, yeah. Okay, so we got a few minutes here. I want you to, you know, tell us a little bit about, you know, where you came from and what your expectation was before you came.
Okay. Well, I was born in Memphis, Tennessee. I lived there for 24 years. You know, again, like Dottie Morris said, Dr. Dottie Morris said that, you know, racism was pretty overt there. And then I moved to Charlotte, North Carolina, and then lived there for about 5 years and lived and then moved to Greenville, South Carolina, and lived there for about 5 years. Then I got a promotion and had never been to New Hampshire, but got the promotion and came up here. So I guess the craziest thing to me that I can say is I have heard the N-word more times indirectly, but it's more times here in this one state than I have in all of the time that I lived in the South and even in Memphis, Tennessee. Yeah.
And Rachel, I want to make clear too that you came here with your spouse, with your wife, who is an employee here at NHPR in development, and that's how we got connected. And that is remarkable. So you're saying you've heard the N-word here more in New Hampshire. And you say indirectly? Like, what does that mean?
Yeah, I know. It's so weird to say that because it's a word that, you know, for a lot of us, it's not only a bad word, it's not only a dirty word, but it just incites fear. And, you know, you automatically feel unsafe. And so to hear it indirectly means that you're hearing it in music or someone saying it to you, not necessarily in a derogatory sense. They don't mean it that way, but that is exactly how they're saying it. I actually experienced at my current job, a customer was telling me a story about how he went to Memphis. I told him, hey, man, you know, I grew up in Memphis. He said, oh, I don't like it there. And I said, well, you know, I don't really like it there either. He said, you know, let me tell you this story about Memphis. And he proceeded to tell me about a young kid he was working with and how he was just the hardest worker. And he gave him all these accolades. And then he told me how the guy had gotten some paint on himself. And he turned around and said, I bet you never seen a yellow, and just dropped it right there, looking me right in my face at my place of work, you know, and thought it was okay.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that kind of echoes the whole thing about people here just do not realize how damaging they're being with these microaggressions, with, you know, not realizing that, you know, you're really hurting a whole group of people, you know?
Yeah. And when you came, you've been here almost just under 3 years now. How quickly was it that you realized it wasn't matching whatever expectations you had?
Oh, man. So my experience with New England was coming up here a couple of times with a couple friends who were from here and going to Maine and going to Boston. And so in Boston, I was able to kind of see the camaraderie of, you know, the American Revolution, and the guy that I was with really explained it to me. You know, I felt all the progressiveness and all the inclusion. And in Maine, it's just a beautiful landscape. So when we came here, we didn't know anything about New Hampshire, but we just lumped it in with New England. And literally 3 weeks after moving here, we went to a lake that is 3 minutes from our house, so our backyard, essentially. Mm-hmm. And there was a big rebel flag hanging off the back of a truck. And we...
This is a Confederate flag?
Yeah, Confederate flag, like Dixie flag, as they call them down south, you know?
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean...
And what do you make... So I see Confederate flags around... where I live in Concord, there's one place in particular that I drive by every day where I see Confederate flag. As a black woman from the South, right, you see those flags in New Hampshire. What is your take on that?
Jack, I cannot express to you the level of fear. It is rooted. It's a rooted fear. You just feel it intensely, and you have to kind of recognize where you are, because I did take a minute when we were here and where, and I said to myself, you know, we're in New Hampshire. Maybe it's not the same, but down south and any other time, and especially growing up in Memphis, Tennessee, you know, and my mom being, you know, involved heavily in going desegregation and going to schools where she wasn't wanted, feeling like, you know, is this the last day for me? You know, it's the difference between being a news story and getting home safe.
Mm-hmm. You've been here, like I said, almost 3 years. Do you want to stay?
That is an interesting question. You know, Brianna and I, my wife, we're really trying to make this better. You know, we are definitely open-minded people, and we understand that sometimes people just don't know. Sometimes people just don't understand, because one of the other things that we picked up on here is that Southern things are very kitschy up here. You know, like, I actually asked a woman that I saw with a rebel flag tattoo, I said, listen, you know, why do you, to be completely honest, no, I want where my friends are and where people see and deal with the stuff that I knew how to deal with. But in all honesty, it's a new place, it's a great place, it's beautiful, and we want to make it better. We want to stay because we want to make it better.
Well, I appreciate hearing from you, Rachel, and thank you for coming on the show tonight.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for representing us, Jack. Thanks for doing this. I appreciate all the voices that we've heard tonight.
Yeah, so do I. So do I. I want to thank everyone who called in tonight. We got an email we didn't have time to get to. I apologize to that person. But it's been a powerful hour, and really appreciate everyone sharing their stories. New Hampshire Calling, that's the show. Pete Nakos is our community engagement producer. Ed Bruder ran the board. Corey Princell is managing editor. Maureen McMurray is our show's executive producer. And I'm Jack Rodolico. Remember, we're all in this together. Thanks for listening.